Chapter 4. Give them leave to laugh as much as they want to. Out of the 22 compositors in this office, 12 at least, set 15,000 on Sunday. Unlike New York, I like this Philadelphia amazingly, and the people in it. There is only one thing that gets my ander up, and that is the hands are always encouraging me. Telling me tea's no use, to get discouraged, no use to be downhearted, for there is more work here than you can do. Own-hearted, the devil. I have not had a particle of such a feeling since I left Hannibal, more than 4 months ago. I fancy they'll have to wait some time till they see me downhearted or afraid of starving, while I have strength to work, and am in a city of 400,000 inhabitants. When I was in Hannibal, before I had scarcely stepped out of the town limits, nothing could have convinced me that I would starve as soon as I got a little way from home. The grave of Franklin is in Christ Churchyard, corner of 5th and Arch Streets. They keep the gates locked, and one can only see the flat slab that lies over his remains and that of his wife. But you cannot see the inscription distinctly enough to read it. The inscription, I believe, reads thus. Benjamin Barr and Barr Franklin Deborah Barr, I counted 27 cannons, 6-pounders, planted in the edge of the sidewalk in Water Saint the other day. They are driven into the ground, about a foot, with the mouth end upwards. A ball is driven fast into the mouth of each, to exclude the water. They look like so many posts. They were put there during the war. I have also seen them planted in this manner, round the old churches, in NY. There is one fine custom observed in Philly. A gentleman is always expected to hand up a lady's money for her. Yesterday, I sat in the front end of the bus, directly under the driver's box. A lady sat opposite me. She handed me her money, which was right. But, Lord, a St. Louis lady would think herself ruined if she should be so familiar with a stranger. In St. Louis, a man will sit in the front end of the stage and see a lady stagger from the far end to pay her fare. The Philly bus drivers cannot cheat. In the front of the stage is a thing like an office clock with figures from 0 to 40 marked on its face. When the stage starts, the hand of the clock is turned toward the zero. When you get in and pay your fare, the driver strikes a bell, and the hand moves to the figure 1, that is, one fare, and paid for, and there is your receipt, as good as if you had it in your pocket. When the passenger pays his fare, and the driver does not strike the bell immediately, he is greeted, "Strike that bell, will you? I must close now. I intend visiting the Navy Yard, Mint, etc., before I write again. You must write often. You see, I have nothing to write interesting to you, while you can write nothing that will not interest me. Don't say my letters are not long enough. Tell Jim Wolfe to write. Tell all the boys where I am, and to write. Jim Robinson, particularly. I wrote to him from NY. Tell me all that is going on in HL. Truly your brother Sam." Those were primitive times. Imagine a passenger in these easy-going days calling to a driver or conductor to strike that bell. HL is his abbreviation for Hannibal. He had first used it in a title of a poem which a few years before, during one of Orion's absences, he had published in the paper. "Oh, Marion Hannibal" was too long to set as a display head in single column. The poem had no great merit, but under the abbreviated title it could hardly fail to invite notice. It was one of several things he did to liven up the circulation during a brief period of his authority. The doubtful money he mentions was the paper issued by private banks, Wildcat, as it was called. He had been paid with it in New York, and found it usually at a discount, sometimes even worthless. Wages and money were both better in Philadelphia, but the fund for his mother's trip to Kentucky apparently did not grow very rapidly. The next letter, written a month later, is also to Orion Clemens, who had now moved to Muscatine, Iowa, and established there a new paper with an old title, The Journal. To Orion Clemens, in Muscatine, Iowa. Philadelphia, November 28, 1853. My dear brother, I received your letter today. I think Ma ought to spend the winter in St. Louis. I don't believe in that climate, it's too cold for her. The printer's annual ball and supper came off the other night. The proceeds amounted to about $1,000. The printers, as well as other people, are endeavoring to raise money to erect a monument to Franklin, but there are so many abominable foreigners here and among printers too, who hate everything American, that I am very certain as much money for such a purpose could be raised in St. Louis as in Philadelphia. I was in Franklin's old office this morning, the North American, formerly Philadelphia Gazette, and there was at least one foreigner for every American at work there. How many subscribers has the journal got? What does the job work pay, and what does the whole concern pay? I will try to write for the paper occasionally, but I fear my letters will be very uninteresting, for this incessant night work dulls one's ideas amazingly. From some cause, I cannot set type nearly so fast as when I was at home. Sunday is a long day, and while others set 12 and 15, 000, yesterday, I only set 10, 000. However, I will shake this laziness off, soon, I reckon. How do you like grease oil? I would like amazingly, to see a good old dash-fashioned Negro. My love to all, truly your brother Sam. We may believe that it never occurred to the young printer, looking up landmarks of Ben Franklin, that time would show points of resemblance between the great Franklin's career and his own. Yet he seemed now rather striking. Like Franklin, he had been taken out of school very young and put at the printer's trade. Like Franklin, he had worked in his brother's office and had written for the paper. Like him too, he had left quietly for New York and Philadelphia to work at the trade of printing, and in time Samuel Clemens, like Benjamin Franklin, would become a world figure, many-sided, human, and of incredible popularity. The boy Sam Clemens may have had such dreams, but we find no trace of them. There is but one more letter of this early period. Young Clemens spent some time in Washington, but if he wrote from there, his letters have disappeared. The last letter is from Philadelphia, and seems to reflect homesickness. The novelty of absence and travel was wearing thin. To Mrs. Moffat, in St. Louis, Philadelphia, December 5, 53. My dear sister, I have already written two letters within the last 2 hours, and you will excuse me if this is not lengthy. If I had the money, I would come to St. Louis now, while the river is open. But within the last 2 or 3 weeks I have spent about $30 for clothing, so I suppose I shall remain where I am. I only want to return to avoid night work, which is injuring my eyes. I have received one or two letters from home, but they are not written as they should be, and I know no more about what is going on there than the man in the moon. One only has to leave home to learn how to write an interesting letter to an absent friend when he gets back. I suppose you board at Mrs. Hunter's yet, and that, I think, is somewhere in Olive Street above Fifth. Philadelphia is one of the healthiest places in the Union. I wanted to spend this winter in a warm climate, but it is too late now. I don't like our present prospect for cold weather at all. Truly your brother Sam. But he did not return to the West for another half year. The letters he wrote during that period have not survived. It was late in the summer of 1854 when he finally started for St. Louis. He sat up for 3 days and nights in a smoking car to make the journey, and arrived exhausted. The river packet was leaving in a few hours for Muscatine, Iowa, where his mother and his two brothers were now located. He paid his sister a brief visit, and caught the boat. Worn out, he dropped into his berth, and slept the 36 hours of the journey. It was early when he arrived, too early to arouse the family. In the office of the little hotel, where he waited for daylight, he found a small book. It contained portraits of the English rulers, with the brief facts of their reigns. Young Clemens entertained himself by learning this information by heart. He had a fine memory for such things, and in an hour or two had the printed data perfectly and permanently committed. This incidentally acquired knowledge proved of immense value to him. It was his groundwork for all English history. 2. Letters 1856-61. Keokuk, and the river. End of piloting. There comes a period now of nearly 4 years, when Samuel Clemens was either a poor correspondent, or his letters have not been preserved. Only two from this time have survived, happily of intimate biographical importance. Young Clemens had not remained in Muscaton. His brother had no inducements to offer, and he presently returned to St. Louis, where he worked as a compositor on the Evening News until the following spring, rooming with a young man named Burrow, a journeyman chair-maker with a taste for the English classics. Orion Clemens, meantime, on a trip to Keokuk, had casually married there, and a little later removed his office to that city. He did not move the paper. Perhaps it did not seem worthwhile, and in Keokuk he confined himself to commercial printing. The Ben Franklin Book and Job Office started with fair prospects. Henry Clemens and a boy named Dick Hingham were the assistants, and somewhat later, when Brother Sam came up from St. Louis on a visit, an offer of $5 a week and board induced him to remain. Later, when it became increasingly difficult to pay the $5, Orion took his brother into partnership, which perhaps relieved the financial stress, though the office methods would seem to have left something to be desired. It is about at this point that the first of the two letters mentioned was written. The writer addressed it to his mother and sister Jane Clemens, having by this time taken up her home with her daughter, Mrs. Moffat. To Mrs. Clemens and Mrs. Moffat, in St. Louis, Keokuk, Iowa, June 10, 1856. My dear mother and sister, I have nothing to write. Everything is going on well. The directory is coming on finely. I have to work on it occasionally, which I don't like a particle. I don't like to work at too many things at once. They take Henry and Dick away from me too. Before we commenced the directory, I could tell before breakfast just how much work could be done during the day, and manage accordingly, but now, they throw all my plans into disorder by taking my hands away from their work. I have nothing to do with the book. If I did, I would have the two book hands do more work than they do, or else I would drop it. It is not a mere supposition that they do not work fast enough, I know it. For yesterday the two book hands were at work all day, Henry and Dick all the afternoon, on the advertisements, and they set up 5 pages, and a half, and I set up 2 pages, and a quarter of the same matter after supper, night before last, and I don't work fast on such things. They are either excessively slow-motioned or very lazy. I am not getting along well with the job work. I can't work blindly without system. I gave Dick a job yesterday, which I calculated he would set in 2 hours and I could work off in 3, and therefore just finish it by supper time, but he was transferred to the directory, and the job, promised this morning, remains untouched. Through all the great pressure of job work lately, I never before failed in a promise of the kind. Your son, Sam. Excuse brevity, this is my third letter tonight. Samuel Clemens was never celebrated for his patience. We may imagine that the disorder of the office tried his nerves. He seems, on the whole, however, to have been rather happy in Keokuk. There were plenty of young people there, and he was a favorite among them. But he had grown dissatisfied, and when one day some weeks later there fell into his hands an account of the riches of the newly explored regions of the Upper Amazon, he promptly decided to find his fortune at the headwaters of the great South American River. The second letter reports this momentous decision. It was written to Henry Clemens, who was temporarily absent, probably in Hannibal. To Henry Clemens. Keokuk, August 5, 56. My dear brother, Ward and I held a long consultation Sunday morning, and the result was that we two have determined to start to Brazil, if possible, in 6 weeks from now, in order to look carefully into matters there, and report to Dr. Martin in time for him to follow on the 1st of March. We propose going via New York. Now, between you and I and the fence, you must say nothing about this to Orion, for he thinks that Ward is to go clear through alone, and that I am to stop at New York, or New Orleans until he reports. But that don't suit me. My confidence in human nature does not extend quite that far. I won't depend upon Ward's judgment, or anybody's else. I want to see with my own eyes, and form my own opinion. But you know what Orion is. When he gets a notion into his head, and more especially if it is an erroneous one, the devil can't get it out again. So I know better than to combat his arguments long, but apparently yielded, inwardly determined to go clear through. Ma knows my determination, but even she counsels me to keep it from Orion. She says I can treat him as I did her, when I started to St. Louis, and went to New York. I can start to New York, and go to South America. Although Orion talks grandly about furnishing me with $50 or $100 in 6 weeks, I could not depend upon him for $10, so I have ealers out in several directions, and have already asked for $100 from one source. Keep it to yourself. I will lay on my oars for a while, and see how the wind sets, when I may probably try to get more. Mrs. Creel is a great friend of mine, and has some influence with Ma and Orion, though I reckon they would not acknowledge it. I am going up there tomorrow, to press her into my service. I shall take care that Ma and Orion are plentifully supplied with South American books. They have Herndon's report now. Ward and the doctor and myself will hold a grand consultation tonight at the office. We have agreed that no more shall be admitted into our company. I believe the guards went down to Quincy today, to escort our first locomotive home. Write soon. Your brother, Sam. Readers familiar with the life of Mark Twain know that none of the would-be adventurers found their way to the Amazon. His two associates gave up the plan, probably for lack of means. Young Clemens himself found a $50 bill one bleak November day blowing along the streets of Keokuk, and after duly advertising his find without result, set out for the Amazon, by way of Cincinnati and New Orleans. Advertised the find and left for the Amazon the same day, he once declared, a statement which we may take with a literary Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.